State Affairs come to order. It's 9:01. We have Senator Malachowski, Senator Coghill, Stoltz, Senator Huggins, and Senator McGuire. We're at full strength.
We have three matters before us today. We have the topic here is dividends, and that's we have a bill that the governor calls the Dividend Protection Act, and so I'm not from Missouri, but those who are said show me on that, and so we'd like the Attorney General's on a really limited constraint. He's doing some important work for the state in D.C., so we want to let the Attorney General join us, and then we'll go on to, we'll just have a, like to spend maybe a little shorter time, you talking about on the dividend aspect of your bill, and then have the last 45 minutes or so for Senator Malachowski to present his amendment. We were going to start with him, but since we're starting with the governor's bill, we'll go to your bill, and I'd like to hold it to about 20 minutes, and then on to Senator Malachowski. With that, General Richards, thank you for joining us in the midst of your other duties and the Attorney General aspect, and not the sovereign of the sovereign fund.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to appear. And I do apologize; it is not in person, but I, as you said, I'm in D.C. And also apologize that Mr. Hoffbeck can't make it. He's currently meeting with Standard & Poor's in person in Manhattan with Jerry Burnett and the governor to try to defend the state's bond rating. So that's important work as well. So, Mr. Chairman, I did not have the opportunity to chat with you in advance of the hearing, so I'm not sure exactly what you would like me to cover. So I do believe that revenue has prepared some slides that go over some different dividend forecasts, so I'd be happy to address those, or alternatively, I could just ask questions of the committee, or answer questions of the committee.
Yeah, I was going to see how the asking questions would go, but that was actually kind of an interesting concept. Why don't the title of the governor's legislation, self-title, is the Dividend Protection Act. So I guess this is when it, we're dealing with, I guess, an ultimate Dividend Protection Act in the latter part of the meeting. This is, I thought it would be only fair to have the administration explain. I guess the title of a bill should be reflected by its contents, and this is your chance to explain to Alaskans how yours is the only measure that will protect the dividend. And that's a little challenge for you too, Lethal.
So, Senator Stoltz, to address that, you know, I certainly don't think that the governor's bill is the only measure that will protect the dividend, but a bill like it is critical to protect continued payment of the dividend. As you may be aware, it is currently the projection of revenue that by fiscal year 24, that there will be insufficient funds in the constitutional budget reserve and the earnings reserve in conjunction to pay for continued payments of dividends, and that could be as soon as fiscal year 21 if there isn't change. And that change means, obviously, that we have something that brings the balance more in budget, so we're not forced to essentially spend our financial savings going forward. So for that reason, the government very much views this bill as one that will be protecting the future payout of dividends, although one that will, as the committee is well aware, change the way dividends are paid from being one where they're...
Yep. Mr. Attorney General, you said the government...
They're calculated by 50% royalties.
You said the government believes that? Is that a reflective view of the cabinet, or is that, you mean to say governor?
I meant to say governor.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure we have our record. Thank you. I didn't mean to interrupt, but that was more than a nuance. So please, I'm sorry I've interrupted. Go ahead, and the people of Alaska are anxious to hear this description.
So I think, Senator, that was the logic behind the title of the bill, that barring a change in the way we're doing our financial system, and including the payment of the dividend itself, the amount, and the way it's calculated, that we will be unlikely in the state without significant financial reform to continue paying a dividend after the next few years when our financial savings are spent down. And just one point I would like to add on that point is that currently fiscal year, I believe, 2022 is the time period about which the earnings reserve account is expected to be depleted if we spend at the current rate through the earnings reserve. But it could be even sooner, as soon as fiscal year 21, is I believe what revenue is calculated. So we don't have exact certainty around when that event could occur.
And that's absent budget cuts. How you figure that in the formula? That's another question Alaskans have, and that's been one of the contentious issues is of supporting budget cuts. And when I was first approached by folks from the governor's lobbying team, they said that budget cuts had to be put off, and we're certainly seeing that philosophy manifested because of the fragile coalition of unions and other groups that the governor put together. So maybe you can how absent budget cuts, how some of this pace is precipitated as well.
Senator Stoltz, so to answer the first question, I don't have from revenue an exact calculation of sort of when the earnings reserve would run out under different scenarios, because I don't think those scenarios are fully formed. But I mean, I will say the obvious, which is the more we close the budget gap, either through additional revenues or through additional budget cuts, the longer it will take to spend out, you know, potentially the constitutional budget reserve and the earnings reserve itself. So if we shrink that gap down, or oil prices rebound, if we shrink the gap down, then obviously we will not spend down those savings as rapidly. And in terms of your second question or point about budget cutting, I'm certainly not caring after the governor, but I've certainly heard him say that he's looking forward to work on a package with the House and the Senate on what budget cuts look like, and has, I believe, made himself available to have those discussions with the legislature and any individual legislatures when they would like to.
Very good. Well, let's start your presentation. This is your pitch, Mr. Attorney General.
Great. Thank you. So Mr. Chairman, I wouldn't classify this as a pitch. This is, in fact, an actual presentation offered in direct response to a request from the committee about how the dividends would look under different scenarios. And in particular, this presentation is revenue's view of what the world looks like under the status quo dividend, what it looks like under the governor's bill, Alaska Permanent Fund Protection Act, and potentially what it looks like under SB 114. They did not do this exact kind of modeling for Representative Hawker's bill because I think that there's complexity in the way the dividend works that made it very difficult to sort of know how to project it because it depends on how much is in your savings account. So if we go to the second slide, just very quickly, I think it's important to explain how to read the upcoming charts. And on slide two, you've got essentially your confidence interval or your range of probabilities as revenue is calculated from under the assumptions. And at the very top of the skinny arrow, that means that revenue is 95% confident that the number will be less than that. Similarly, at the very bottom of the skinny line, it is 95% confident the number will be above that. And if you look at the blue and the yellow, the middle of that, where there's a solid dash between the colors, that means that is the governor's think, the revenue thinks there's a 50% chance that the number will be higher or lower. And then to finish off our estimates, they think there's a 75% chance that it will be lower than the top of the blue box and higher than the top of the yellow box. So if we go to slide three, this effectively lays out the way that the dividend is calculated under the status quo, under the Permanent Fund Protection Act, and under SB 114, as proposed, obviously, in the current bills. As I've not testified to the committee already, both the Permanent Fund Protection Act, and I believe I've heard Senator McGuire say this as well, and her proposal, that both of these bills allow different formulations and calculations of dividends. It really just, if you increase the total amount of the dividend, that means you decrease the amount on a sustainable basis, either from a fixed payout or from a percentage of market value that would go to the general fund. So ultimately the goal in the dividend is to figure out the balance between what should be paid out as checks and what should stay in the fund and what should be paid out to the apologize on the phone, it's very easy to sort of get into talk mode and not allow questions. Or are there any questions at this point?
This is not a reticent committee here. It's they'll certainly interject, but we will respect your time, and I know you're doing it, critical work for the state right now, and that's and I'm glad you're doing what you're doing back there.
Thank you, Senator. So the Permanent Fund Protection Act has in its dividend payout calculation formulation, first-year dividend of $1,000 just set flat. That would be paid out of the roughly 700 of the $1.4 billion that's already been appropriated last year for dividends, as I understand it. And then in the future, 50% of all royalties would come out, all royalties would be deposited in the permanent fund, and then 50% of those royalties would come out to pay the dividend check every year. Under SB 114, I'll let the Senator address her exact mechanics, but I understand that 50% of the royalties collected by the state each year would go to the dividend, but there's also a floor of $1,000. And if that floor is hit, which revenue projects it would be, I'm sorry, 75% of dividends are paid out of the royalties every year. But there's a $1,000 floor, and if that $1,000 floor is hit, that means 75% of royalties is less than a dividend payout that equals $1,000 a person, then any additional amounts that need to be made up would come out of the earnings reserve. I think that's the Senator's proposal.
Correct.
And then the final slide shows the status quo dividend and the status quo dividend formulation, which was about $2,000 this year. It is based upon 21% of basically half of the earnings over a five-year average. That's probably the easiest way to put it. It comes out to 21% of the last year's of realized earnings. And it's important to understand that this formulation does use realized earnings because that's the way statutory net income is calculated under the current statute. So it's not 50% of the earnings of the fund every year. It's 50% of the realized earnings of the fund. So for a stock, for instance, you don't get a realized earning until you actually sell it and the actual sale occurs. So slide four is revenues, revenues determination of what the dividends are likely to be based upon how it views when dividends can be paid. And obviously, and I apologize, I have an older version of the slide, so I don't know exactly what the bullet points on the right say, so I'm just going to go from sort of my own explanation. But effectively what this is saying is in about fiscal year, 22 to 24, somewhere in that time range, it is likely that there will not be sufficient funds under the status quo to pay dividends. And this shows sort of the spend out. Well, I should say it differently. I should say by 2024, there is roughly, a 50% chance that we will be able to afford to pay any dividends. There's always a chance going all the way out into the future, although it is below 50% chance that even under the status quo, things could happen where there would be sufficient funds to pay dividends. And I suspect without having a chance to chat with a modeler, these would be events where, for instance, the stock market did really, really well. So we had just a ton of money coming into the earnings reserve from BRA, enough to actually cover, the budget gap as well as pay full dividends. But these are not high probabilities. You can see after 2024, revenue predicts that there's less than a 50% chance that the funds will be there to pay dividends. And another point I would just make, and it you can kind of see it at the top of the line, the 95% confidence level, that's sort of the trajectory of projected growth of the dividend if there was money to pay it. And what that's really saying is that the dividend is projected to grow if the money is available to pay it on a real basis, because as the fund grows, that growth rate under the current formulation is slightly higher than actual inflation. So the dividend is projected to, as it has in the past over time, experience real growth and not just inflationary adjusted growth. So it would get bigger and bigger and bigger over time on average, although of course it would experience year to year the same volatility that it experiences historically. It can go up and down, 100% in a couple of years currently, from high hundreds to, low 2000s range, based on the volatility associated with the five-year averaging technique and slide shows it on a payout basis. Slide 5 shows it on a per-person dividend basis. So this shows that, you know, about $2,000 is the projected mean dividend for a few years until you reach somewhere, you know, in the early 2020s when there are insufficient funds to pay it, in which case it would be reduced under the status quo formulation. Slide 6 is the Alaska Permanent Fund Protection Act projection of dividend payouts. And you know, I'm just going to skip right to slide 7 because I think it's just more useful information to talk about in terms of the size of the dividend, because the payout has obviously been divided by the expected number of people, which does grow slightly over time as we assume population growth in the modeling. So on slide 7, we see that the dividend is projected to sort of by 2020 rise up to about, you know, to be about $1,000, and then coming down afterwards to start trending down past $1,000, even past $500 out by the end of the 2040 time frame. And but like all of these projections, there's a pretty broad range of, there's a pretty big range of the confidence intervals. You know, as high as 1,500, as low as, you know, in 2040 almost even zero. And of course, that reflects the fact that there are, you know, depends on what the oil price is, and it depends ultimately in this pretty much on the oil price the way this is laid out. What this does not capture is it does not capture what happens in a world where future production of oil looks something other than the current Department of Revenue production forecasts. The modeling in the governor's bill, and we did for 114 both, assumes volatility in returns and oil price and inflation and a few other factors, and models those probabilistically. The revenues modeling around production forecasts are not probabilistic, they are deterministic. And the consequence of that is that whenever you have a royalty-based revenue stream or a production tax revenue stream forward look, it's always going to be declining because the Department of Revenue projects declining oil production. And the reason the Department of Revenue will invariably always project declining oil production is because of the relatively conservative nature by which the production forecast occurs. They effectively take known pools that are under development and they, you know, forecast the future developments in those pools, a little bit of future development, not much, and then assume that those developments decline over time. What is not included in the production forecasts is sort of new optimistic hope in future. New fields that come online onshore, any offshore development past the 3-mile limit, there's no assumption about that. There's very little ANWR, I mean, NPRA oil in the forecast, just, you know, kind of what, I don't even know if that moose's tooth in there, but it wouldn't be anything beyond really that and what's currently under development. And then obviously there's no ANWR production, and there's also no inclusion of what would happen if a gas line is built and you have either more oil production from associated gas production, or, you know, alternatively, the royalties that would be associated in this forecast with the actual gas line. So some of the slides at the end here will show some hypothetical scenarios that are not probabilistic, they're deterministic, but what would royalties potentially look like if we had some future successes? And, you know, I think it's reasonable for budgetary purposes to sort of only count the oil that I think of as, you know, in the bank. You've got a pretty high probability and confidence level that you're going to get it. But, you know, there likely will be some success on the North Slope and maybe even potentially great success in terms of future development. That is information that I think we should keep in mind when we do look at what are necessarily these declining dividend slopes of APFA and SB 114. So the next slide is slide 8, and again, I'm just going to jump right to slide 9, which is the, this is the same projection done for Senate Bill 114 over the governor's bill of 50% royalties. This is the colored confidence interval bars are the, you know, 75% royalty payment. And as you would expect, they are 50% higher than the governor's bill on the confidence intervals because they are paying out 75% rather than 50%. So obviously, you between the Senate Bill 114 formulation and what I have for the governor's bill is, of course, that it has a $1,000 floor, which means at some point in the future, just looking at the graph I have, it looks like Department of Revenue says that about 2026, there's a 50% chance that you will actually hit the floor of $1,000. And what that means is the royalty stream the state isn't receiving doesn't meet the minimum dividend payout, so funds from somewhere else in the system will have to make up the difference to hit the $1,000 floor. And as I said, and I could be wrong, I believe that the senator proposes that that comes out of the earnings reserve, but the senator can certainly correct me if I'm mistaken.
That's correct.
Thank you, Senator. So the next slide sort of shows this a little more acutely of the consequence of the floor, which is, you know, the confidence interval of what revenue projects will be the result of additional funds other than the 75% royalty stream that will be necessary to make up the floor under these confidence intervals. And we see that, you know, given the production forecast of revenue is very pessimistic in the long term in particular, I mean, frankly, unrealistically so, I think, because something good will happen on the slope. As the production runs down close to zero under the model, that means your royalty dividend under the senator's bill or the governor's bill will begin to run down close to something like zero, which means there's necessarily projected, you know, most of the dividend needs to be made up to catch the floor out of an alternative source of revenue. So that's why this, you know, angle is rising on slide 10, because the projections assume less and less oil over time. I will say that in looking at the floor provision, there are some consequences to the floor that I think are important to talk about. And, you know, I'm not going to say they're good or they're bad, because it's really just a policy decision. But from, I think, the way I've modeled this in the past, I viewed a floor in conjunction with a royalty dividend as a little unbalanced, because the floor is a guarantee in the sense that people are guaranteed a certain dividend. But by having the payout on the royalties, and 75% of the royalties, a large number, you're also giving the upside. So in effect, you're guaranteeing the downside, but you're also giving the upside in higher oil price environments. So it's a relatively, well, it's exactly that. You're giving up the upside out of the system through the go to the budget or stay in the permanent fund, but you're guaranteeing the downside, which is not something that, when the governor looked at this, he thought was necessarily as balanced as it could be.
So does that mean it protects it too much? I mean, that's kind of your titled bill is the Protection Act, and I don't understand the criticism if that's the title of your bill. Just a theoretical question.
Yes, Senator. So I guess that just internally, when we've had the discussions within the governor's office, and again, this is a policy decision from the legislature's point of view, is that capping the dividend at 1,000 and just calling it 1,000 was, you know, a pretty decent approach, and then tying it to royalties so that the people, you know, share success equally with the state when they have it was a good approach. Those were both good. But the two in conjunction just wasn't a way that the governor wanted to go. So that's all I'm saying.
Go ahead.
And then we move to so slide 11 is, if this is sort of a more optimistic case, you know, I think we pretty hard at this point that the production forecasting is used by revenue and incorporated into the revenue's models for future dividend projections is static. There's no real analysis of what happens if, you know, there's more oil and new field development. The next few slides just give some hypotheticals under the governor's bill and Senator McGuire's bill, what would happen if some optimistic things happen to the dividend. So slide 11 shows that if we got a gas line, what the dividend might look like under, you know, the current assumptions about how much royalty the state would take in under the AK1G proposal. And obviously the effect of bringing on the gas line is you have higher royalties because there's more revenue coming into state coffers. In slide 12, analysis, but it's the tools we had to work with. This shows what happens if we had some other success on the North Slope that's not a gas line, but other types of success like new pool developments. What would that result to in increases in per person dividends? And we see that, you know, they think, and DOR worked with DNR on this one, you know, and they think that, you know, it's highly likely that we'll have, you know, in the future, $150 to $250 million, you know, pool that is developed, and that would roughly translate to an increase of, you know, $100 per dividend during, you know, the height of that pool's production. They think it is also likely that we'll have 100,000, you know, barrel per day field come on at some point in the future, which would result in, you know, roughly a $220 to $280 increase in the dividend at peak production. And then if we had really great things happen, which DNR doesn't, at this point of view, with the information it has available, think of likely, you know, we could have as much as a $1,000 to $1,500 jump in the dividend, and even, you know, a $2,000 jump if we, you know, got another Prudhoe Bay kind of thing. Or half a Prudhoe Bay, I should say, three times for Park. And with that, Senator, I think that I don't need to go through the last couple of slides. They're just sort of methodological stuff. Senator, with that, I think I finished my presentation, and Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to answer any questions the committee has.
We appreciate you taking the time today and having, I just thought it was fair to have when we had Senator Wilkowski's different approach to have just a brief re-explanation and affirmation of the other plans. And good luck in your deliberations and meetings back in D.C., General Richards. And thank you. If there are no other questions, thank you for participating today. And two relieved Department of Law employees are happy to leave the stage uncontested. Senator McGuire.
Thank you. I just want to say, Craig, if you're still there, Mr. Attorney General, your assumptions were correct. It's hard when you're on the phone to see nodding, and I tried to make an audible yes, but I appreciate it, and go get them today.
All right. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
And thank you, committee.
Did your staff here at Department of Law wish to say anything?
Thank you, Attorney General.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. We'll just take a very brief at ease. Back to work after the brief at ease. We're going to do about a 20-minute discussion on the issue of the dividends, and have Senator McGuire re-explain and so we have the consistency of the record, talking about all the proposals on the same day as we can.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know we're having a series of working sessions on this the three proposals that exist, and then, of course, the new one today. And I appreciate your dedication to it. So my hope is that people will recognize that we've been given a time limit, so I want to get to the most important parts today that are new to the committee, refreshing your memory on some old ones, but just remind members of the public and all of my colleagues that our office is open to continue to talk about these things as we move through them. I want to start by saying that the chairman and I have had an opportunity to talk recently about the potential for either amendments to be offered into Senate Bill 114, a draft or blank committee substitute, or a committee substitute pro-offered by the chairman. And at least at this moment in time, my understanding is he would like to have a committee substitute offered. And so I want to talk briefly about the points that I would like to include into that committee substitute that I think make the bill a better bill than it already is. So you'll hear me reference that a few times. I want to start by just going back to the principles that I talked about, and this is important to remind as we go through and we start hearing new information. I would say the IQ of lawmakers now on the subject is very high, and so it's really good to hear people starting to take opinions, their knowledgeable opinions about what they can do. And I want to start with just reiterating, so my first goal was to retain a dividend. I spent a lot of time explaining why no need to, but my bill of all three proposals currently in the hopper is the only one that guarantees a $1,000 dividend, period. That's a fact. You heard the Attorney General make reference to the fact that in some ways we're all looking at the same conundrum, which is if, when faced with a deficit, you can look at cuts, you can look at additional revenue sources, but it's that permanent fund that's really going to get you to a solution. And so what percentage of it goes into the people's general fund for uses like fire and safety and roads, et cetera, for them to be used that way, and what percentage goes directly to people in the form of a check? That's the balance. My bill strikes the balance that benefits the people the most. I can say that with every confidence in me. If your idea is to receive a dividend. So in my bill, you receive a $1,000 dividend no matter what. It's made up by the earnings reserve account in times of low. And on top of it, you get the upside of high oil prices and a potential gas line, because you get the rents and royalties, almost 75% of that, divided between every man, woman, and child as well. So that's number one. You saw the part about reducing volatility. I'll get to that later. There's no question but that the governor's plan, if it were proven to be legally sound and that members wanted a direct payout and an annuity approach, there's no question but that the governor's plan reduces volatility more than mine and more than Representative Hawker's, because we have the percentage of market value approach that still allows for some fluctuation. But mine clearly makes the state budget less volatile than it is today, and so does Representative Hawker. The third, to clearly expose the size and cost of government. I've mentioned this over and over again. My plan is the only plan that does not purport to fill a proverbial gap of $5.3 billion. The other two plans assume that's the size and cost of government, and dividends will be paid sort of after that assessment is made. So that's one other thing that I want to emphasize. If you think the dialogue needs to continue about cuts, Senate Bill 114 is your bill. Fourth is to allow for maximum use of our wealth over generations so that the benefits and burdens are shared. And finally, simple and easy to implement. I've heard multiple people in the building, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back or Jesse on the back, but just to say that because we started in January of last year, it's been said to me, we can understand your bill. It's harder to understand the other bills. Granted, those bills are purporting to fill the entire gap, so of course they're going to be more complex, but I think that we've achieved the result of making a solution that's simple and easy to implement. Again, just to reiterate where we are, right now we are proposing $5.2 billion in current cost and size of government. You can see on the right, we've talked about how are we purporting to pay for it, most of it coming from our savings, the amount of revenue the state's bringing in. I'll show on another slide is actually right around $1.8 billion. So this is for you to really think and understand that the solutions are only going to be very few. Of course, the first would simply be to say we'll have a size and cost of government that equals the exact amount of revenues we bring in. That is a choice for lawmakers to make. I have a specific slide on that, but just to roughly say to yourself, it's about $1.8 billion. And if you wanted to do that, you could cut the entire rest of government, and you would be safe there too. I think that many lawmakers would say, and many people in the public, that's a little draconian given the size of government today. So if you're in that camp, your only choice is to continue to pull from savings to make up that gap through additional revenue, new revenue. Again, other types of cuts, less than the full amount, or to use the permanent fund. The next slide illustrates the problem in a graphic way that you can see the gap that we have between what we're currently spending and what we're currently bringing in, $1.8 billion, that's what we're bringing in. And that comes from a combination of sources I've put on the left for wonks that want to get into it, $800 million in royalties, $200 million in production taxes, some other taxes like your alcohol tax, your tobacco tax, etc. Everything has been taken into account. I've also had lawmakers pull me aside and say, Liesl, are you forgetting a pot? Are you forgetting a pool? Nope. Bringing in every dollar, it's 1.8. Page 5, three proposals have been introduced to the legislature. I'm excited to have this slide now. When we first started modeling and making presentations, there was just Senate Bill 114. I've made it clear that the most important goal of that bill was to get the conversation started, to get Alaskans talking about where we are today, that I didn't have pride of authorship, but that I knew one of these solutions that came into the hopper would have to pass. Senate Bill 128, we call it the annuity model or the Permanent Fund Protection Act, the governor's bill. Mine proposing a percentage of market value approach. Representative Hawker's House Bill 224, proposing a 4.5% percentage of market value. Every single one of the proposals currently in front of the legislature purport to use permanent fund earnings. What else could we do? That's my premise.
Senator McGuire?
Yes.
One omission of the bill. Isn't there a House bill similar to yours?
My apology, and we will update that slide. You're absolutely correct. Thank you.
Many people have said, well, what happens to the your bill? Does it morph into a 240, whatever the POMB bill is, when it gets to the other body?
Absolutely. And
There is traction on a similar.
Yeah. Okay. I would be thrilled. So my apologies. We just dropped House Bill 303 by the majority leader on the other side, Representative Sharice Millett. So the second bullet there, you can say SB 144/House Bill 303, and the House Finance Committee is working their way through that proposal. And thank you, Grace. Slide 6, a constitutional amendment to access the corpus of the permanent fund requires a vote in the next general election. On this slide, I just want everyone to stop and think about this slide for a second. As we get to the next ones, and the governor's team just showed you where that drop-off is, and you go back to the stages of grief, I had someone pull me aside today and say, I appreciated that slide because I think that most of us are just angry still. We're angry other people didn't solve it, or we're angry we didn't save more at upsides. We're angry the market didn't fare better. We're even angry at President Clinton for vetoing ANWR. There's a lot of things, okay? But if you think that the voters are angry right now at the proposition of making a change like what you would make in Senate Bill 114 that still guarantees a $1,000 dividend and at the upside could be as high as $3,000, $4,000 depending on future production taxes, think how angry they're going to be at you, and I won't be here, 2.5 years from now, when you've eaten through your entire CBR and your entire ERA, and now legally your only choice is to go to the voters to get into the corpus to pay for some level of government that would be above that 1.8 or 1.5 billion in current revenues. And if you think the people are going to look at that kindly and say, well, I'm really glad you put off the decision, you know, to touch my dividend in 2016, I think you're squarely wrong. I think they will blame you, and that's part of human nature. I think people necessarily right now are weighing both things out. They're trying to influence you, but they're not going to give you the upside of their decision. They're not going to give you the benefit of saying, you're right. I didn't want to go there at that moment, so I join you in the consequences. I disagree with that. I think they will not join you in the consequences. Number seven.
I just want to throw in, though, another constitutional amendment could be putting the structure in it, because ultimately the public views the earnings as part of the corpus, and it would be structure. It's putting a structure into something that people already politically believe, and I think the legislature has believed that in, with the hands-off approach. So there's just the permanent a proposed constitutional amendment, the possibility, and I don't see support for that upstairs. I can only spin my wheel so much, and there's two different levels of upstairs there. A proposed constitutional amendment wouldn't be to necessarily access it, but it would be to put a legal structure in that would take away the trustess. So I just want to make that sort of on the record.
Senator Stoltz, and I appreciate that. I know we're going to go into Senator Wilkowski's bill, which will bring up the notion itself. You're absolutely right. You could propose today, and by the way, past legislatures have thought about this. You and I both know. The conversation about the constitutional part, the permanent fund itself, and the statutorily, legislatively created earnings reserve account has been ongoing for two decades. And the discussion in the building has been back and forth. As I've mentioned on the record, the legislature has declined to go into the earnings reserve account. So we certainly know that there is some protection around it, some feeling by the legislature that that would not be a good decision. But I think there's been disagreement in the building about whether or not the two should be enshrined together in the Constitution or not, and we're facing that necessary point. Senator Stoltz, you're absolutely right that if you wanted to, you could propose to the people a use, a merger of the two and a protection of it. My only point is that if you did that, it still brings you back to the numbers and the fact that if you want a size of government that is above $1.8 billion, if you think that there should be a size of government that's above 1.8, there are only a couple ways to get there. And that if you wait until the point where the CBR is depleted and the earnings reserve account is depleted, now you're in a crisis-driven decision-making mode. So I would at least encourage you, if that's your deliberative point, that to do it now, because that at least gives you time, if the voters say no, to figure out what your choices are. Because if the voters say no then, I don't know what you do.
The voters, and that puts another play in the dynamic, the voters might be more inclined to vote for something if we've done the requisite budget cuts, and it's all bringing the voters into the whole dialogue. And I just wanted to make sure it wasn't just a, this was a route to go after the corpus, because that really, I just felt a little defensive on that. I know that wasn't your intent, but anyway, well, let's go on. I don't want to intrude onto your time.
No, I appreciate it, but I really wanted to make that point today, though, that if you put the decision off from today, that the point, the decision point that you will get to at the time that you need to will be surrounding that. And you're absolutely right, Senator Stoltz. There will be people that say, thank you for waiting until the last possible moment. But there will necessarily be people who are angry that you waited too. And so I think that's a fair point to put on the record. Slide 7 shows this just in a little different kind of a graphic. It shows you the total revenue in the blue box of what we are bringing in today. Every single smoke and mirror gone, every single label gone, that is the amount of money that your house of government is bringing in today. On the right-hand side, that shows you if you wanted to adopt every revenue source in the governor's plan, these are additional revenues that you would raise, additional taxes. That's $457 million. If you want to raise taxes more, as a legislature, if you want to make if you want to make an income tax that's higher, you can up that amount. If you want to make a statewide sales tax higher, you can up that amount. But fundamentally, the universe of possibilities isn't going to get much higher than $1 billion in new revenues outside of the use of the permanent fund. So just file that away in your head, and no matter what you do there, you're going to have the administrative cost of setting up new methods of taking in taxes from Alaskans. So that total, let's say you assumed that you stick with status quo, you bring in the new revenues, now you're up to $2.25 billion, that should be a B there. So that leaves you then, if you want to talk about cuts, we could do that as well. You'd be, if you want to reach close to today's size of government, it'd be $3 billion in cuts. Number eight, just to update the committee, you've all been handed out the Cowens report, and I just wanted to put it on the record, Mr. Chairman, that Cowen had a widely respected company, reviewed all three of the plans that currently existed, and on Friday, the three of us presented to the trustees of the Permanent Fund Corporation, and all three proposals do not recommend needing major asset reallocations. They all protect the corpus itself, and they all predict that the fund would remain viable.
I'd like committee staff and our recording staff to this was provided at request of Senator McGuire, so our record's complete. Thank you, Senator McGuire.
And I put that on the record so that as you're going into the decision-making part of it, you can at least rule out that concern that might linger in the back of your head about whether my plan or Rep. Parker's plan or the governor's plan, by virtue of changing the investment strategy, would materially erode the value of the permanent fund itself. And just that part of it, just that one part of it being fiscally sound. This is the current cash flow, number nine. We're all familiar with it, but just to remind people how we fund government right now, the Attorney General did a great job of explaining the way that permanent fund dividends are paid out. And so you can see that part down there in the dividend box in the orange. Page 10 is the proposed cash flow under Senate Bill 114. Again, one of the things I like the most about Senate Bill 114 and House Bill 303 is the simplicity. You see very little movement of the major pieces that have been legally recognized throughout Alaska's history.
So I have a question on that, Senator McGuire. We had a fairly lengthy, I think still unresolved, legal discussion.
We did.
What would have been the... have there been any questions raised on your legislation?
No legal questions on mine, and I think that's something we're going to have to continue to dialogue with. The Attorney General, in his opinion, feels amalgamating these accounts into one does not present legal challenges. I think we'll come back and have more discussion. Emma's here, his team is here, and they continue to be frustrated with me for bringing that up. We've worked very well together, but I think they're frustrated on that point with me. I'm not satisfied yet. I'm meeting with Wallace today again to discuss this. That's our legislative attorney. But just to put on the record very clearly, again, every one of these plans has pros and cons. A big pro of my plan is that it guarantees a $1,000 dividend to every man, woman, and child, along with the potential upside of 75% of the royalties. And a big plus side of mine is the simplicity of it, the fact that there are no legal challenges. It keeps the general fund exactly as it is. It keeps the CBR exactly as it is. It keeps the earnings reserve account as it is. The only major changes, of course, is the swap in the royalties and the fact that the earnings reserve account will pay out, instead of just paying dividends, it'll pay out a 5% percentage of market value to the government.
The governor's plan requires some three-quarter votes to drain the CBR.
Yes.
To protect it. And then
yep. So there's a movement initially. It'll require a three-quarter vote to move that CBR into a new general fund. It also purports to create a brand new general fund. So the notion of the general fund we have today is all gone, and instead the earnings reserve account becomes a general fund. And the concern that some people have about that is it's untested. We've never touched the earnings reserve account other than to pass through the dollars that come out of it to pay the dividend. We have no historical precedent for it. Equally, we have no historical precedent, obviously, for merging the CBR into this general fund pot of money and then sweeping it back. So there's a sweepability issue that comes up, and there's a retrievability issue. And I would say that's the way to keep it in your mind. The retrievability issue, in my opinion, after reading the legal opinions more and more, is the biggest concern for me, that we have a case of first impression about whether once we put all of these new dollars, granted they were ours to begin with, if you will, or the state treasuries to begin with, into the earnings reserve account, can you then appropriate them out? And I'll give you the best way to think about that concern is that when we get to the next slide on inflation proofing, the legislature has voluntarily, you could say over-inflation proofed or generously inflation proofed, whatever term of art you want to use, the corpus to the tune of $16 billion. $16 billion additionally have been added by legislatures through the years that if you want to just think about when I showed the slide of how much money we actually have left and I said, really, we have about $14 billion, you could add 16 to that. And just know that sitting here today, we would not be facing this decision then for an additional probably 3.5 years. So there's a material difference to that, and yet the legislature has never said, well, we're going to pull that back out again. Next slide, I'm going to go quickly here. I don't want to...
We go until about five of. I don't have to stop you when okay. You're on such a roll here.
Okay, I don't want to spend time on the next slide. You guys have already seen it. Slide number 12, this is a very important slide. If an Alaskan out there believes that it's important to retain a dividend for their family, Senate Bill 114 or House Bill 303 is your bill because it guarantees a $1,000 dividend. Right here you can see that over the course of time since 1982 to present, 34 dividends have been paid to Alaskans, 18 have been less than 1,000, and 16 have been greater. So, Mr. Chairman, at this point in our history, more Alaskans have received a dividend below 1,000 than above. So the fact that you would be guaranteed a $1,000 dividend is a good deal. Page 13, again, shows you the place in which members of the legislature will be faced with whether or not, let's say they don't adopt Senate Bill 114, House Bill 303, 128, or 224, they will be faced with the question about whether or not they continue to pay a dividend out, and they could, and you could, but again, the size and cost of government would be relegated then to exactly the amount of revenue you were bringing in. And so that would be 1.8 at current day prices. Next slide, we're almost done. Just a reminder that the percentage of market value approach reduces volatility in the commodity of oil, and Representative Hawker and I both have it. It doesn't reduce it as much as the governor's because that relies on a set amount. If you wanted to put a spending cap in to reduce that volatility, I would like to do that. And I'm going to offer it as an amendment to this bill. I'm sad that I don't have it in already because every time it's modeled without a spending cap, and I think that's a weakness. And the reason it's a weakness is because the public has mistrust, and they think that if production taxes go up, because under my bill, production taxes still go into the general fund, the legislature might still overspend. So the provision would be a simple percentage of prior year appropriations so that you're materially only allowing the size and cost of government to go up by 120%. The next slide just simply shows that point I made earlier, that the legislature has historically put in over-inflation-proofed or securely inflation-proofed the permanent fund. Policy call about inflation-proofing itself, the current bill that I have shows under Cowan's numbers you get an additional 1.9%. Do you want to put that 1.9% divided between dividends and the size and cost of government, or do you want to require it to be transferred back to the corpus? You could. Or the next slide, I like this better, and I'm going to propose this as an amendment, too. This is a part of the governor's current bill that says when the total value of the earnings reserve account exceeds the target amount four times of the current year's transfer, the excess should be transferred back to the principal. So this is a way to really guarantee inflation proofing. Why is inflation proofing so important? We all know it, but just to reiterate, the goal in creating the permanent fund was not to pay out dividend checks. We all understand that. It hadn't been described that way, but it was designed to share wealth that came from these non-renewable resources over generations, knowing that Alaska should be a place that continues to grow. If we don't maintain the viability of the permanent fund itself, whatever we use its earnings for, we're depleting that asset. The final two slides just show the cost of doing nothing. Again, the longer we wait to act, the lower our reserves are, the higher the risk of failure. A lower reserve balance simply takes away the choice we have to fill the deficit. And, of course, slide 19 showing again that really important place. Again, if a permanent fund dividend check is important to you and your family, Senate Bill 114, House Bill 303, guarantee a $1,000 dividend. If you don't want to go with these bills, recognize that there is an outside chance that you will adopt the governor's bill, which does not guarantee that. It only guarantees 50% of future rents and royalties, or Representative Hawker's bill, which would pay the general fund exposure first and then go down into the consideration of paying a dividend. Or let's say you adopt none of those. I'll end on this point. You could do nothing. You could adopt the status quo. And unfortunately, in fiscal year 19 through 21, that's the point where your legislature would then be deciding whether to continue paying out a dividend to you under the present system and not fund government. And I really don't think that'll happen. I think personally that the cost of government is somewhere above $1.8 billion for the basic stuff. I think it's somewhere below 5.2, but somewhere in there, you've got to make up that revenue. And I think when the legislature is faced with the reality that they would be paying the dividend out the current way to you and your family, and the reality of the deficit, I think that they will not pay that out. And I think that's where families should sit up and pay attention, because you have a shot at guaranteeing a $1,000 dividend today, but if you wait, you don't. And let's go to the last slide, Jesse. Last slide simply says, what are the net effects of House Bill 303 or Senate Bill 114? It materially adds $2 billion to the general fund. Add that to your 1.8. Now add cuts, which I believe should be in the area of between 500 and 800 million. Now add some changes to revenues. I think we can all agree that there's going to be some change to oil tax credits. You saw an article that talked about the fact that in the process of amending ACEs, we eliminated a floor entirely on all future new oil. There might be a chance that there's a 4% production tax put in, a minimal amount. There might be a lot of things. Let's say you combined $500 million in cuts and $500 million in new revenues, add $1 billion, now you've solved the problem with Senate Bill 114. It guarantees a $1,000 dividend. It's the only proposal to guarantee a dividend. It reduces volatility in the budget. It grows the permanent fund materially. It maintains buying power in the corpus. And again, it's the only bill that currently doesn't purport that the size and cost of government is $5.4 billion. So necessarily, it maintains downward pressure on the cost of government.
Okay. I'm going to have the last word. Thank you.
Good.
For the I think the one thing I think, yeah, I'm glad you hit on the last point about the budget reductions. I don't think the public has confidence in any of these plans absent meaningful budget reductions.
I agree.
My constituents, they think we have the terminology used is we don't have a revenue shortfall as much as we have a spending surplus. And I don't think we've seen the commitment in the executive branch and certain parts of the legislative branch to address that, what my constituents call the spending surplus and unsustainability. So I think that confidence of any of these plans is can only be enhanced by the commitment to the reduction side. And with that, we'll stand briefly at ease and go to our next presentation.
we're back to order, and we have our last item, and members can, if it takes a little longer, we can stay a little past 10:30. If folks have to leave, certainly it's not a disrespect to the issue. Appreciate if you are able to, but Senator Wilikowski.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we can get done in 30 minutes. We'll try to go through it as quickly as possible. But I really appreciate you hearing this matter. This is, I think this is a historic debate. I think, and I'm glad it's being done in the open. And I respect the opinions of others. And the point I want to make right at the start is I know there's a reaction by some to my proposal. But I think there are many Alaskans that support this. And all I'm asking is just give me a chance to lay out what I have to say. And I think Alaskans have always had a reaction. They've always been wary of what government does with our money. And that's just not Alaskans, that's Americans. And I think it's important to look back what the purpose of the permanent fund was. Why did we set up the permanent fund in the first place? And it was because we had a $900 million windfall from Prudhoe Bay. And within 5 years, it was all gone. And Alaskans reacted very strongly to that. Alaskans of all political persuasions came together and said, we need to protect it. And ultimately, we set up the permanent fund. And I think we could sit here and debate what was the intent and what Governor Jay Hammond meant. We could probably pull out quotes that indicate a lot of different things that were meant. But I think we're here today, and I think the dividend has become something that is critically important to Alaskans. And I think a lot of Alaskans like the idea of continuing to get a dividend. And so there are many proposals, as we've heard, on how we solve our fiscal situation. And a lot of them use the permanent fund earnings. And Alaskans are concerned, and I think rightly, that what will be the future of our dividend checks. And so what this does is this would put the earnings reserve, the calculation of the dividend, directly in the Constitution. And the way it's done is through a resolution, as you know. The body would have to vote two-thirds in the House and the Senate to put it before the people of Alaska, and then the people of Alaska would ultimately vote. And if they decided that they wanted to do this, then it would become law, and it would go into the Constitution. Now, we've had 6 hours of testimony in this committee, and I know there's been testimony in the other body, from the public about using the permanent fund. And I would classify the two general types of testimony. It's been 180 people or so testified. But that you certainly have a significant number of Alaskans who testified, don't touch my permanent fund. And that's very vocally and very strongly. There's another group of people who say, you know, let's use the earnings reserve. But at the same time, they recognize the importance of the permanent fund. I think there are very, very few people who've testified, or very few Alaskans, quite frankly, who say, let's get rid of the permanent fund. In fact, the governor's plan, all the other plans, your plan, Senator, emphasize the importance of the dividend. And I think that's something that the governor made clear, something that you've made clear. And so I don't think what I'm trying to do here by putting it in the Constitution is necessarily at odds with what you're trying to do. Okay. And here's why. And we can debate what the amount should be. The way my resolution sets it up is to put the dividend calculation the way it is currently, and I think we said 2013 just because I filed it last year, but puts that in the Constitution. But here's, just give you some brief numbers on this. And if you look at the Callan report, for example, the expected rate of return is between 6.5% and 7.2%. I think we heard testimony from one of the administration's experts that the expected rate of return is between 6.5% and 7.5%. If you look, and we'll have a slide on this in a minute, if you look at the historic returns, the historic 31.5-year return is 8.9%. So if you look at how much is being withdrawn and used for the dividend, and you compare it to the rate of return, I'll give you some rough numbers. So And I am going to use rough numbers here because it's easier math, but you'll get the idea. So assume we have $50 billion in the permanent fund, which is probably a little bit less today, but assume it's $50 billion, it goes up, it goes down. Based on stock performance, assume you have an average rate of return of 7%, which is below our 1%, actually almost 2% below our historic average, but right about in the middle of what we're projected to get. If you have $50 billion in the bank, in the permanent fund, that's the corpus and the earnings reserve, and you're pulling off a 7% rate of return, that's $3.5 billion. $3.5 billion that you're pulling off. Last year, we paid out $1.2 billion for dividends. So that still leaves 2.3, on average, this is an average amount, that still leaves $2.3 billion every year in the earnings reserve if the body decides that they would like to use the earnings reserve. So it doesn't necessarily mean, by putting it in the Constitution, it does not mean that the earnings reserve is unavailable for other expenditures. It just simply addresses the concerns of the wariness of Alaskans that we're not going to have a dividend. And I think it goes a long ways towards building trust with Alaskans. So, and if you look at sort of historically, and I haven't run a whole lot of projections on this, but you'll see some numbers as we go forward. We're right now in a very strong bull market, and so in the stock market, and that's led to the high PF permanent fund dividend check that we have. If the market goes up, if the market rates go higher, then you have stronger earnings, which means more money in the earnings reserve. If the market goes down, you have less earnings, which means less payment in the form of a permanent fund dividend check. So I think there's sort of that self-correcting mode that's available. There's lots of concern about using the earnings reserve. This is one way to gain the trust of the people of Alaska by saying, look, we're going to put it in the Constitution. You will never lose your permanent fund dividend check. I think it's important for us also to look at the impacts to the state of cutting the dividend on Alaskans and on our economy as a whole. And when we do mining taxes, for instance, and there's a proposal in the Senate Resources Committee, some of us are on, $6 million. And we're hearing projections on how, well, hey, is that going to impact small miners? Is that going to impact big miners? We do an analysis. Same thing with fish taxes. There's a proposal to increase fish taxes by $24 million. What's the impact to the commercial fishermen? What's the impact to the various industries? Of course, oil taxes, we do extraordinary analysis. There's a bill right now the governor's proposing that would increase oil taxes, harden the floor, increase the minimum from 4 to 5%. That would raise about $100 million at low prices. As the price goes up, that dissipates and the increase goes away. But that's $100 million. We're talking about a proposal that is going to take between, potentially, the various proposals out there, $700 million to over $1 billion out of the Alaskan economy. And I think it's important that we evaluate the impacts to Alaskans, because this is something Alaskans have come to rely on. What's the impact to the economy? What's the impact to small businesses? I think we need more analysis on that. Fortunately, there has been some analysis, and we've my staff for TJ Presley right now is just going to give a brief presentation about some of the research that's been done over the years. It's by people we all know, Gunnar Knapp and Scott Goldsmith from ICER, very respected, and he's going to talk briefly about some of the things they said. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to stop and allow my staffer to just very briefly give a short presentation.
And I appreciate when we get proposals. We got today's about 4 minutes before the meeting started, and that's really unfair. I have a staff of two people voluntarily, and I would like members to really respect the committee a little more. And that's 4 minutes before today. It was kind of insulting, and that's why we were struggling. I came up here without staff today. So that's just an admonition to everybody on forward. Go ahead.
So, Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is T.J. Presley, staff to Senator Wilikowski, and I'll just very quickly go through a sectional analysis of what the Senate Joint Resolution 1 does and then talk about the impacts of the permanent fund. So, very quickly, Senate Joint Resolution 1 would put a question to the people of Alaska asking them whether or not the permanent fund dividend program should be put into the Constitution. Section 1 of Senate Joint Resolution puts the current statutory language of the earnings reserve into the Constitution. And the reason this was done was because it was necessary in order to keep the current transfer of money the same as it is now in statute, which of course sees income flow from the corpus to the earnings reserve account and then eventually to the dividend payment account. Section 2, subsection B, puts the current statutory language regarding the five-year average, the formula that determines our five-year average for our dividends, and the transfer of money from the earnings reserve account to the dividend account once again into the Constitution. And finally, subsection C calculates the amount necessary for the dividend by dividing the total amount that's available for appropriation for dividends, of course, by the population that's eligible. Wrapping up the last two sections, the Section 3 provides transition language to capture the current ERA, which is in statute, and put that into the Constitution. And the final section, Section 4, puts the resolution before the people of Alaska in the next available general election. So, as of February 19th, as Senator Wilikowski stated, the principal of the permanent fund was about $50 billion. Over the 31 and a half years of the entire life of the fund, there's been an annualized return of about 8.9%. This slide here just shows very quickly all of the years of the dividends, and you can see that the most recent year in 2015, many of us remember the very large $2,000 dividend check. The next graphic is a little difficult to see, but what it does show is that it shows the steps that are required to actually calculate the total amount necessary for the dividend appropriation. So it just adds the statutory net income from previous 5 years is the first step, multiplies that to get an average by 21%, divides that amount in half to get the statutory amount that's allocated for permanent funds, eventually backfills any previous year's dividend funds and operating costs, and you eventually end up with dividing the estimate by the number of eligible recipients, and you come down to about $1.2 billion for the total appropriation needed for dividends, and this was for calculating the FY14 dividend. Here you see the math is a little bit simplified on this graph, but it does break down to $1.2 billion is the total amount available for dividends. So what we did here was we wanted to show the balance of the earnings reserve account right now, which you can see is about $6.7 billion. So to Senator Wilikowski's point earlier, it is true that even if SJR1 was approved by the voters, the legislature would still have access to other income in the earnings reserve account that is above the necessary amount for the dividend. So now, just going quickly to some impacts of the dividend, the first and most important point was that the dividend is uniquely Alaskan. Senator Wilikowski posed this question to Malin Rietveld, the PhD who came and talked to us about sovereign wealth funds, and he did point out that we are the only sovereign wealth fund that does spin off dividends to our constituents. And so that dividend has had great economic impacts over the 34 years of the life of the fund now. And so what you can see here is some of the quotes from Dr. Goldsmith, but the most important economic impact that can be made about the dividend is that it is so well spent by the residents of the state, largely in the state. Dr. Scott Goldsmith found in 2010 that the purchasing power of the PFD equated to about 10,000 additional jobs, 15,000 to 20,000 additional residents, and $1.5 billion in personal income. In a more recent report, Dr. Gunnar Knapp found that reducing the deficit by $100 million and reallocating the PFD accordingly would lead to a loss of about 720 jobs, but he did use a multiplier out. So if you did reallocate the permanent fund at $1 billion, which is the extreme, it would have a loss of about 7,000 jobs. Just continuing on the impacts, Dr. Goldsmith did a 2010 study in which he reinforced many of his previous findings, including the ways in which the PFD was spent, but also the impact that the dividend had on the economy when spent by Alaskan residents and not the government. He credits much of the boom of the early 80s to the spending power of the dividend and goes on to point out that the 2009 saw the purchasing power of the dividend at about $900 million or roughly equal to that of state wages or the retail trade sector in the state. So just now moving on to some effects of the dividend in Alaska, we can see that it has allowed, it has created a constituency that has watches over the government when it comes to expenditures from the fund. It has allowed a way for Alaskans to partake in their mineral rights to invest in the way that they choose. And as more recent studies have shown, has contributed to reducing the gap between income levels in Alaska. So the Alaska Department of Labor noted Alaska's second position when it came to relative wealth in the country by state. Dr. Goldsmith followed that up in 2012, showing that Hawaii and Alaska were tied that year as the most equal state. And in 2013, Matt Berman of ICER showed that the dividend provided about 19% of income for Alaskans at the bottom half of all earners. So the dividend of rural Alaska, of course, as Dr. Goldsmith notes, is also has a tremendous impact and outsized impact in rural Alaska in some communities. But just to quickly wrap up on some key points, SGR 1 is only a resolution that asks the people of Alaska to approve the question of putting the permanent fund dividend, the current permanent fund dividend program, into the Constitution. It does not bar the legislature from accessing funds in excess of the amount needed for the dividend. And SGR 1 acknowledges the incredible economic impact that the dividend has had in Alaska, as well as the significance of Alaskans partaking in mineral wealth that's unique to our state. SGR 1 protects the dividend, the portion that residents of Alaska partake in their fund, into perpetuity.
I look forward to the sentiment that it's only a resolution printed before the voters and bring up our elected attorney general bill. A resolution, or the simple resolution. McGuire.
Thank you, and through the Chair, Senator Wilkowski, I appreciate you bringing this forward. Question on the record, would you be open, we looked at a variety of ideas back in January, and one of them was to enshrine what we do with the permanent fund and pay out into the dividend, but we talked about the notion of splitting part of that with stabilization of government at certain trigger points. And I wondered if you had considered anything like that, whether it was percentage of market value approach and some percentage, 75-25, or some dollar amount that said, you know, when, in other words, the notion of making the government whole in this time of deficit, do you consider or would you be open to any amendments that allowed for that in your bill?
Well, this is a, Mr. Chairman, this is a constitutional amendment, and so I guess it gets kind of challenging when you try to put things in the Constitution, if you're talking about putting in spending in the Constitution along with this. I'd want to see the details. I'd be open to ideas.
Just on that point, I think if you were to put something like this before the voters, and the upside would be a guarantee of a dividend, but the upside would also be that the government got some percentage of it, which arguably was anticipated back when the constitutional amendment went into effect in 76 to create the permanent fund, maybe that trade-off would feel good to people and maybe they would feel comfortable voting for it. So I look forward to working with you on considering that.
Yeah, if I could, Mr. Chair, I'd just say I think there's a lot of reluctance, a lot of hesitation among people, just Alaskans in general. I know certainly in my district I hear from seniors, I hear from people on fixed income, low income. They're just concerned about losing the dividend. It's become something that they rely on, and I think all of we've heard testimony from many members' districts about that. And so I think that would certainly go, enshrining something in the Constitution would go a long way towards easing people's concerns that they're not that there will be a day when they don't get a dividend check.
One of the just before I go to Senator Falcon, one of the items we're trying to deal with holistically deal with the budget, and there's been a real reluctance from the administration to discuss the many of the programs and victims' compensation funds and others that are funded by the dividend, including part of corrections budget. And I hope this at least spurs. They would have to actually deal with this, this fiscal question. I'm looking forward to maybe, we've been zero fiscal notes, this might provide positive fiscal notes if we have an honest analysis, and we don't always, and I don't want to be pejorative, but I mean perhaps a more complete analysis so I don't step in any toes unintentionally of the impacts. I think that's been really lacking in this debate.
appreciate the discussion that and recognition that the dividend has become part of Alaska's economy, and just we're more worried about laying off two DEC employees than we are about the impact of the dividend economy, and that's but it's reflected in headline stories and so forth. So I think having this discussion and having the discussion of whether folks like the dividend or not, and there are folks that do support eliminating it, but if we don't have the whole discussion, I think we're really doing a disservice to the process, and this has been a good vehicle for that. Senator Coghill, with that editorial aside.
Thank you, and I appreciate I figured sooner or later we were going to have a proposal like this come to the surface, so I think it's an appropriate conversation. Probably one of the things that we struggle with, Senator Wilkowski, is there's two parts that I just want to bring up. I don't have the answer to them yet, but I'd ask you to come back with some information. One of them is, once we enshrine in the Constitution this methodology, the ability for the government to use any of that money becomes much more difficult, and so then we get a taxing right problem for the permanent fund dividend itself. Mm. And so kind of go think about that. I don't know the answer. I'm just bringing it up as a question, because I know that in years previously we talked about this very thing, and IRS then became one of our big problems. So just think about that. The other thing is, if we do use something from the earnings reserve account and we have the dividend formula enshrined in the Constitution, if we went to the earnings reserve and used anything, it has an impact on the dividend, then the use of those probably becomes less likely or so problematic that because it would impact the dividend cash payout. We've actually had years where under this formula we didn't have the cash to pay a dividend, and so we would bump up against the Constitution. So I think those are a couple of things we need to look at. I haven't had a chance to review this, but those are right off the top of the head.
Thank you, Senator. Yeah, and just some interesting things that we came across when we were researching this. Senator Lyda Green from your neck of the woods, Mr. Chairman, was actually sponsored a similar resolution to this, and she and I didn't agree on a whole lot, but I was glad to see that we agreed on this. On the issue of legal, that we will ask legal about that question that you and about the tax ramifications. As far as using the earnings reserve, we checked with legal, and what we were told was you could access the earnings reserve. The earnings reserve would still be available for government appropriations, even though it's in the Constitution, just as it is now. And I guess it would have the same impact as right now. If you take money out of the earnings reserve now, it will have an impact on future dividends. If you take it out later, it will have an impact on future dividends. But at least Alaskans will have the knowledge that it's in the Constitution and it must constitutionally be paid out.
Thank you. On that point, for things that you're researching, you're right that today it's been interpreted that, you know, it's 11 and 21 to use anything out of the earnings reserve account, but the legislature has declined to do that. And I would say it'll be a case of first impression. And the second part, just to consider from legal, is does enshrining the payment of the dividend out of the earnings reserve account in the Constitution change that flexibility? So I think that's the real question, is that you're defining it differently. As it stands today, the ERA was a creature of statute. We know that soundly one legislature can't bind another, but once you go this next step, what happens there?
If I could, Mr. Chair, I believe my staff talked to our counsel about that, and maybe you could relay what you were told.
Through the chair, Senator McGuire.
You identify yourself in the record.
Through the chair, this is T.J. Presley, staff to Senator Wilkowski. I did chat with Hillary Martin in legal, and the issue of the ERA, the nature of the ERA changing as it does by bringing over CBR money and changing the account into a sort of general fund account, was not at issue here. But I can confirm with her that the paying out the dividend constitutionally from the account also does not change the nature of the account, and let you know.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Several accounts can be tacked on another provision that prevents an income tax without going to people, and you might have an unstoppable force.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I know that's unsolicited.
I don't have anything else, Mr. Chairman. It's really pretty simple. It's a policy call, and I guess, you know, I could have gone on for hours and talked about the impacts of the permanent fund. I think we're all well aware of that. We left you with a document from Scott Goldsmith about the impacts. There's a 1984 document by Gunnar Knapp about the impacts of the permanent fund, and there's a lot of information out there. I don't think there's any dispute that it does have an enormous impact on our economy and on individual Alaskans' ability to buy fuel and buy food, and a lot of people save it up for school, for university, for their kids. I'm happy to follow the committee's direction and get more information on whatever topic you'd like if you want to pursue this, Mr. Chairman.
Well, we have seen certainly adjustments in the social and business fabric of the state. There's a prominent Alaska Native organization that seems to have geared their annual conference around the disbursement of the dividend. I mean, that's a stated fact, and I've got a cattle rancher in the valley that says that's his main sale points, or they coincide. He's able to sell half beefs to families because they have that dividend payment. Certainly, it's a fabric we dealt with the auto dealers. They've built their business plan around dividends in the past. The legal system is many people are provided legal help because they have that guarantee of a dividend, and certainly the victim's rights. I'd really like to flesh out how the dividend. I think we've had an incomplete discussion as we're talking about changing the course of the impact, and we talk a lot about the impacts of reduction or increases of state spending, but the private sector has been really short shrifted in the discussion and how it's impacted it. Certainly, there's valuative judgments on whether it's the appropriate thing to disperse commonly owned money. But anyway, Senator McGuire.
I just wanted to draw the two together for a second and say that for the public that's watching, when you look at Senate Bill 114 and this particular proposal, SJR number one, a lot of the same principles are at stake, and I just want to say that I too believe that the dividend is important. That was my first principle, and I think it's important for one reason as well that we haven't talked about, which is the opportunity for individual Alaskans to decide how they believe a share of government wealth could be used best. So that's another part of it that's empowering. I think what we're trying to struggle with now is we accept that the dividend is a part of the economy. We accept that it reduces stratification, that it has an impact on the private sector. The question is, what is the size and cost of a core function of government services that also contribute materially to Alaskans' lives, to the private sector growth, and to civilization, and how do those two balance out? And I think at the root of every one of these bills, and certainly these two together, is that conversation, and why I go to that chart that shows the place where you don't want to get, where a legislature has to meaningfully decide to do one over the other entirely. And that's the idea behind it, is to create a glide path where you can responsibly acknowledge money here in the form of dividend check equals positive results. Money here at some level to create a core supplement of services, also good. And what's that balance? So,
I suspect without the dividend, we wouldn't have reached $50 billion.
Yeah.
That's
Yep, I think it's a fair point, too.
That's Hammond's noble experiment worked with creating it's almost like the mythical guards of the Holy Grail there, and it's worked as effectively. And I appreciate having this item on discussion. There's certainly a lot of merits and pros and cons of the constitutional approach. As I found out, I certainly have been largely rebuffed by a lot of folks that I need votes for on a public vote, and bringing the public in on the whole discussion of the permanent fund itself. It's a hurdle, as Senator Wilikowski knows. We've got over the first hurdle. We've had the public discussion, and looking forward to the inviting the public to share their opinions and public testimony and work out with members, and which means some more evening time. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, the conversation today has been meaningful to me, but I just like to point out the other kind of things that are going on in this building that people need to understand beyond their permanent fund dividend. is that there are a number of bills floating around that increases licenses for, it doesn't matter whether you're a real estate agent or you're a hunter or a fisherman. It increases fines. In other words, every place you look right now, particularly by the administration, there's an effort to take money out of the pockets of Alaskans. Maybe that's the right thing. It's against my normal tendencies, but Alaskans are paying, and oh, by the way, we have a proposed budget of $5.2 billion. I think most Alaskans, I know my neighbors, and I know I feel that is grossly above what we can afford. Forget about what you like. It's about what you can afford. And what we're really doing is saying, Alaskans, there may not be as much concern about what you can afford because we will decide that for you, and I am directly, Mr. Chairman, opposed to that because in spite of all the conversations about dividends, what I don't want to do is placate Alaskans so that with our right hand and our left hand we're reaching in their pocket and taking a double handful of money. We're, quote, picking their pocket. Thank you.
Thanks. I appreciate the dialogue, and I kind of started out with the Attorney General is on the phone. I got a note that said crooked caller. I said, wait, what the heck? This guy's a decent guy, and I guess my caller was crooked.
So you got a cryptic notes can be a little funny. I shouldn't have shared that, but I thought it was funny. First thing I thought is, Craig's a decent guy. What's it? And I'm just glad they noted that my when you address yourself. With that, we will set this bill aside and should keep my mouth shut. We will stand adjourned.